Okay. Any questions, comments, updates you guys want to start with? Yep, Peggy.
So, update. Frisco is able to do long and low for 5 minutes at least each way on the long lines now.
Excellent.
He can't do it yet, of course, under saddle. But my question is there something that I should be, is there a way that I could encourage him to do that, or he's just going to figure that out on his own?
Under saddle. It's a matter of accuracy with resisting the rolling of the barrel. So resisting the rotation of the spine and pelvis is only something we can do from the saddle. Like it's so on the long reins, that's what the long reins are working on, resisting rotation. So when we ride, how we're balancing our torso and using our thighs is the only way to resist rotation under saddle. And then the way we resist lateral bending when we're under saddle, because we have to allow it on the long reins, we have to allow them to figure out the lateral bending part. But when we ride, just keeping the neck bones centered to your seat bones is how we reduce lateral bending throughout the entire spine. So basically, the neck straight and the barrel level, those two things combined will always create the impulse to lengthen the neck. Now, if he's not engaged enough, he may lengthen fast and hard, rip the reins, and fling his head right back up. So engagement plays a little bit of a role that once they lengthen those top line muscles, that the hindquarters have to be stable enough without muscle tension to hold it. So with weight on his back, it could just be the difference between the long reins and the riding is he needs more strength to do the same job. So the way you can build up the strength is if he's got the coordination and the new posture on the long reins, more steps is basically more reps. Ooh. That rhymed. More steps is more reps. So if you want to increase his time on the long reins, if he's able to hold that posture on the long reins on a circle, large or small, then every step you're building up the muscular support. And then when we add weight to it, basically they're finding the same coordination again. But now it's with weight. So it's a difference like on the long reins, it's the coordination in his own body. So just like if we're walking, right? And then with a rider, it would be like walking while you carry weights or have ankle weights. Same coordination with more weight.
So would I be helping him more now by riding in an actual saddle instead of bareback, that bareback
Probably,
pad?
because if you need that accuracy, for me to be as accurate as I can be in the saddle, bareback is exhausting. It's exhausting. It's like it is a thigh core workout. And so if you're feeling kind of relaxed bareback, you might not be resisting the rotation and bending enough. And so I would go to the saddle where it just gives you the support to be more aware of your body weight distribution and also be able to use your muscles more for resistant aids rather than just holding your position, which is what you have to do when you're bareback.
Thanks.
Good. Hello, Cindy. How are you?
Hi, sorry it's been so long.
That's okay. Glad to see you at the meeting. So
Yeah,
we
glad to be
just
here.
opened it up for questions, comments, updates, anything you
Gone.
guys want to bring? Nope.
Where do we start?
Right?
It's been a big week.
Oh, good. Is Huck doing good?
Yeah.
And
He
Lindsay?
is.
Lindsay is getting used to standing at the mounting block again.
Oh, good. Oh, and Deb, I keep meaning to ask you for an update on what's his name? The baby,
Milo?
Milo. Yes.
Milo.
Milo. Because it was so similar. I had the lesson with Huck and then the lesson with Milo not too far apart. And what Huck was, they were both similar in the dysfunction of the, it was in the lumbar and pelvis, but Huck kind of placed his whole hind quarter off center. And what Milo was doing, just so you guys know, is that campy sort of looking hind end with the sickle hocked, always bent legs, turned out to be he was rotating his whole spine and pelvis in order to swing each hind leg forward. And on the long reins, when I really resisted that rotation in the spine and pelvis, he was not happy.
He's not trying to kill me, so
He's
that's a
not
good thing.
happy.
He's
Did you?
actually thinking about it, and he can almost anticipate when it's going to happen sometimes, and he comes to a halt. He doesn't know what else to do. He just,
When he swings the leg straight forward.
when he feels that it's going to pop,
Oh,
or
the leg dropouts.
the
Yeah,
leg
because.
dropouts, when he feels like you can just see him, he starts slowing down and he'll come to a halt and it goes clunk and then he goes on
So
instead of it falling.
Deb was really concerned because of the way, and the osteopath said there was nothing wrong with him. There was no
Nothing. She
adjustment
said
needed
there's
whatsoever.
nothing needed for him.
But when we looked at him on the long reins, and what I said to Deb, what I do is when I'm observing a horse, I'll try to mimic what I see in my own body. And then that allows me to feel how they might be organizing in order to look the way they do. So when I sort of mimicked Milo, then it became clear, oh, he's basically twisting his whole spine and pelvis to move his legs forward. And Deb's big concern was riding or groundwork, he would have these sudden collapses in the hind legs. Like the leg would just sort of drop out for a second. And it didn't seem to bother him mentally or emotionally. So we could kind of rule out any pain related issues to that. But it was unnerving. And it's an interesting case in that even on the long reins, when I could really resist the rotation through the back and especially the lumbar and pelvis, which is where we start with the long reins, the legs dropped out more, not less. And so, if you think about it, if you're changing the functionality of the axial skeleton, that's going to directly affect the leg kinematics. And if he's been locking his legs and mobilizing his spine in order to move, we're literally asking him to reverse that coordination. Resist moving in the spine and pelvis and start moving, especially using the ball and socket hip joint to swing the leg forward and back. So that's going to change all the soft tissue, muscle, tendon, ligament, fascia, and that's going to affect the mobility of the joints. And the leg dropouts to me, whether it's a shoulder clunk or a hind leg collapsing, I think it's a change in soft tissue tension that generates a sudden increase of mobility through a joint. And then it just goes wonk out of control. So the body is used to this really restricted joint use. And as the axial skeleton is becoming more stable, that's dynamically releasing excessive muscle tension. That's just, and the body makes that exchange one to one. So you can think for every pound of increased resistant force in the spine, you're releasing a pound of muscle tension around the limbs, right? And so that's why I think we get these sudden leg dropouts, is just the mobility being restored. And I think if that starts to slow down, Deb, That would be a huge sign. And if you're not comfortable riding him while that's going on, it's like you got to ride what you're comfortable with. But it's so fascinating because that's going to be a tough transition. And he's
Yeah.
had lots of injections around the low back, hind quarter, and hind
Yeah.
legs.
Yeah, he's so when I long lined him yesterday, he only dropped out going to the left, and it was what was interesting, it was always in the same place on his circle.
It's a great mystery. I don't know why that
Is. I don't know
happens.
what that is. I'm like, it's always the same place. And usually the inside leg, but he dropped up with the outside. But it's always 15 to 20 minutes into the work. So I think the first 15 to 20 minutes, he's really in his habit. Yeah.
And
And
it was so cool that you had the osteopath look at him like a couple days before we looked at him.
yeah.
And there is nothing, no adjustment needed,
Nothing.
nothing wrong, no big problems, nothing that like a vet or body worker could fix. And yet, it was just his habit of how he organized movement that he could not change without the training guidance, without that
Right.
resistance to his habit.
Yep.
No, and that's why this part of the work, there's not a lot of people looking at horse training this way. And so that's why I think some horses just become these perpetual health problems because the coordination is repeating the stress pattern. And there's nothing that's obvious that can be found with palpation or x-rays or MRIs or anything like that. It just is how the nervous system organized.
Yeah, I think that's probably why he came to me the way he did with so many injections. They were trying to fix it that way.
And the theory of that is if you make a horse comfortable, which is what the injection does, that the body will just automatically find its best use. And I go, that's a bit of a stretch. That's bodies don't just figure out best use. Like what we call talent in people, talented athletes. I go, yeah, there's talented horses and talented athletes that maybe get closer than most without training. But even talented athletic people and horses still need training and skill development and still aren't going to refine it to a level of optimal use. That takes training. Any other questions, comments before we dive in? Hey, Vicky.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's all right. How's your fall?
Oh, she's so cute.
Oh, good.
She got her little buds of teeth in yesterday,
So
and
fast.
so fast. And she's starting that diarrhea thing, so she didn't want me cleaning her butt, and it's been a progress. But today she laid down. And I cleaned her butt off, and she didn't even get up. She realized I was finally helping her.
Oh, good.
So, but God, what a learning acceleration!
Isn't it fast?
Oh my
The only
gosh.
horses I've ever worked with that are almost as fast as foals were actual Mustangs from the BLM, from the Bureau
Sure.
of Land Management.
Yep.
But wild horses, foals are as close as we get to wild horses in the domestic life. But that rate of learning is wicked fast. Like
Oh
horses
my
learn faster than people in general, but I go baby horses and wild horses are just incredibly fast learners.
Oh yeah. First time I tried to clean her butt, she bucked her little hind legs out at me twice and ran off and looked at me, and I next time she tried it, I smacked her with a wet rag on the butt, and she didn't do it again. So she and mom's already showing major boundary learning sessions, and so I have too, and she's catching on pretty fast.
Yeah, because they're so cute. We just hate to set boundaries, but if you don't, they turn into little monsters.
Oh, absolutely. Everything's in her mouth, and she's starting to this morning, she's been trying to drink water for the last 2 days, but this morning it was almost like she was trying to chew it.
So she was finally getting something down her throat. It was so cute to watch.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, I'm just going to share a couple of quick videos. And again, kind of like our conversation last week about physics, this one I had to go back and find, but I just loved this video. And what this is it's a farmer I follow. And what we're looking at here, this little device is a balancing table robot, right? So you, I'll just play the video. It's a short, so it'll go through pretty fast. But basically, you put something on this little mechanical robot table and it balances it. And then he tried an egg. And this is the guy I follow. He's hilarious. But the stabilizing table, because an egg has movable weight inside, it balanced the ball where the air pressure is always the same, no matter what, right? And it balanced a glass of liquid really fast. But once he put an egg on it, this table, I think, goes for 20 or 30 minutes and cannot. Yeah, it's still. So if you guys think of this mechanical balancing table, it's actually a little robot thing. If you think of that as the horse, and you think of our torso, which is really similar to an egg, right? That's why I use Weeble Wobbles a lot as my like if people remember those little toys, they're egg shaped with weight at the bottom, and it was a little toy said Weeble Wobbles, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down,
Fall down.
right? But when you take an egg, here's the physics of taking. Now you have like a move, so it's starting over. So this is the stabilizer, and he's gonna, I think, throw a ball on it first. Yeah.
What's the name of
Then a
this
glass
site?
of water. This was a short. It was, and then he puts the egg on it. And you see how every time the weight of the egg moves, the table has to compensate. So if we think of move with the horse, that's the physics involved, right? Every move we make as because the difference with that egg is number one, it doesn't have an easy square stable point of balance. The surface area that the egg would balance is very, very tiny, much like our seat bones balancing our whole torso. Then, if you have the yolk and the white inside the egg, that is movable weight inside of the shell, right? Just like our body, we can change weight distribution. So what this table is demonstrating is that if we take no control over our own weight distribution, the weight shift of the egg causes the table to have to adapt, and the adaptation of the table throws the egg out of stability. This is a freaking horse and rider, you guys. This is what I see all the time. And this guy's so funny. His YouTube channel is I think it's called Farming While Tan, something, and he's basically a black farmer, and he's just hilarious, super intelligent guy who talks about farming and all kinds of things.
What's up at the bottom? It says Blackbird Coop.
Oh yeah, Blackbird Coop is the at Blackbird Coop, I think, is his YouTube address. Yeah. But it's and he did this video. He goes, I was frankly a little triggered by this. And the whole video, if I turned the sound on, is basically him going, this looks like farming, except it takes farmers about 15 years to figure out that it nothing ever stabilizes. And he goes, oh, it's date night. Oh, the pigs are out again. Oh, it's time to put up fence posts. Oh, except it's raining and the posts won't set. And it's like just the life of being a farmer. He's sort of going, that's what it feels like, is like this egg on this table. It just can't ever stabilize. And that's what happens when you're working with nature, with living things, whether it's farming. I think he's a chicken farmer. But it's like, life is not stable. You're always adapting on a farm, whether it's a vegetable farm or a livestock farm or a horse farm. And I think this went on. This guy gave it like 30 minutes with this egg on this balancing table, which I just find hilarious because I looked at it and instantly saw horse and rider and why that whole idea of move with the horse is just such a bad idea. And you can see if the egg can't stabilize that weight distribution internally, it's throwing the table into chaos, and then the table shifting is throwing the weight of the egg into chaos. And it's just this back and forth, back and forth. That's the physics of horses and riders. And I actually went, you know what? I go, we are egg-shaped. If we think of our torso like an egg, that is similar to the mass of our torso. We have less mass up top at the point of the egg, more mass at the fat part of the egg. Right. And what we're balancing on mechanically are two little tiny seat bones. So we're balancing 54% or more of our body weight is in our torso. So it's literally like trying to keep an egg upright on a moving horse. That's how delicate our balance is. And Peggy, that might answer your question as to why Frisco isn't finding the long and low under saddle compared to, because the egg is not there, right? So it's like we're either helping facilitate that stability. If you think of the horse as this table, right? If the egg could resist moving, that would help stabilize the table, right? But that back and forth, the table moves, the egg moves, the egg moves, the table moves. It's a never-ending cycle.
That's it.
I bet if you
So,
hard boiled the egg, it would stabilize.
maybe, I don't know. Maybe, because again, the egg, I also stumbled across there's a million videos on how to balance an egg. Apparently, it's quite an art form, whether it's hard boiled or raw.
Yeah, they spin differently when one's raw and one's hard boiled.
Yeah, so it's going to change a little bit the mass, but you could think of the hard boiling is muscle tension. Right? It would make a difference with the stability, but hard boiling the egg would be the equivalent to constant muscle tension in a human body, where if we want to be supple and receive the information of the movement, and this is another guy doing the same thing with the same gizmo. So he throws a ball on, and it takes a minute or so, and then the table stabilizes the ball. Right? Then he tries an egg. And it's much more difficult. And you see, the faster it goes, the faster everything goes. And this is why when we get faster and harder in our aids, shit usually comes unraveled. Because if we look at the aid as a force we're generating rather than resisting, then watch how the more the egg rolls, the faster the table goes. This guy can't hardly stand it.
Yeah, because if we generate the force, we're pushing into it.
Right. So what the egg is doing, whether it's hard boiled or raw, but especially raw, what the egg is doing is shifting weight distribution every time it moves. Right? Every time that weight distribution in the egg changes, the table has to adapt. And as soon as the table adapts, the egg adapts again. So what we talked about in the last meeting is the difference between I think this one was a little clearer. Is the difference between when we give an aid by literally moving our bones, like we think of pushing our leg inward or pulling, moving our arms for rein aids, or the driving seat to go forward, It's like all of those things are generating forces, right? So if we think of our aids as a gesture, we move our body to give the aid, then that's the equivalent of there's the flow of the river that is the horse's movement, right? And let's say it's got lots of waves in it anyways. When we make a gesture, physically move our bones while we're riding, it's like picking up a rock and throwing it into the river, right? And that's going to create a wave force. So a wave is two forces colliding that generate more force, a different direction of force, right? It's a collision of forces that increases the force of both. When we think of riding, and this is the hard part, nobody sees us move because we're changing weight distribution and muscle tone without moving our bones. That would be the equivalent of a rock on the bank of the river. So the river hits the rock and redirects and hits the rock and redirects, but the rock never pushes back and never generates its own force. It's always just a resistant force. That's ideally how we give aids. Stop the share really quick. Does that make sense to you guys? Because it is a boatload of work to not let the horse wobble your egg torso or make you move your limbs. That is a lot of work. So if we think of steering, right, what we typically think of is we bring our leg in, inside leg to outside rein, right there in a nutshell. We bring our leg in for forward or to push the horse over. What I'm saying is if we want balance, then our leg is the corridor that the horse pushes against. So how much muscle or weight does it take to resist the wave of force coming from the horse and just be the rock, right? Not be budged. So aids are always a resistant force. Whether the difference is we can create a resistant force through a gesture, which increases, it introduces a new force in an opposing direction, or we can create resistant force just by being resistant, not moving. So even if a horse is at halt, rather than squeezing our legs in, right, we tone the muscle and we create pressure with the muscle and then back it up with a light tap from the whip or our hand or the tail of the reins, whatever we got. But if we have to push hard enough to move our bones in, that's going to throw the egg out of balance in the saddle. So we can only give enough leg that we can also balance the egg, right? And so if we're balancing the egg in the saddle, how much pressure can we give with our muscles? And if that's not enough, because what we're really doing with a leg aid is we're resisting the current speed that the horse is at. So the leg aid doesn't tell the horse, go forward. Hey, sorry, cat fight. The leg aid doesn't give the horse a cue to go forward. It dynamically creates resistance for the speed the horse is choosing. I got nothing to throw at her either. Hang on. Stop. Okay. Always a hat nearby. So is that making sense to you guys? Are you following? Because that's a big deal. That is the difference, especially like we get away with murder when we first start with a very unbalanced horse. We only have to create resistance, even with gestures, somewhere in the neighborhood of being able to make the current habit uncomfortable. But the closer we get to three-dimensional balance, the more it matters. The
Makes
more it
sense.
matters. Because what we're doing with our arms and legs, that's basically the banks for the river of the horse's forces of motion to flow through. right? So our arms and legs on the outside of the horse is the outer edge, and balancing the egg and how we orient ourselves in the saddle is the inner center line of that river of force. So the less we move, the stronger the channel. And for horses that aren't very keen to go forward, they're the ones that we use too much leg on or drive with our seat. And all that does is the little bit of energy that they're generating, that little trickle in the desert, is getting splashed over the banks instead of going into like a hose and channeling it forward. Right. So when we think of movement as the invisible forces of motion, and we just a river or a hose or water is kind of the easiest way to picture it. But what we're doing with our body is resisting water, resisting those invisible forces, and trying to guide them, the center line of the horse, in three-dimensional balance. It feels like a straight pose. Right? It doesn't kink, it doesn't roll, it doesn't go past the saddle and waterfall into the ground. It just sort of flows straight out through the shoulders, neck, and head. Any questions on that, you guys, or thoughts?
I just had a thought because this, I just for clarity for me, it's you're saying just create the neutral corridor
You
and
create a bank for the force to, it will come up. Sometimes it'll, like if you think of a rock on the edge of a river, right? The force of the river, even if it splashes a little against the rock when it hits, it's going to divert the flow. It's that solid rock is going to channel the water to go not there, anywhere but there.
But the habit for the human is to concentrically contract around that. That's the habit that the human has to override.
Yes. Well, this is where, in the nuance of getting to three-dimensional balance, we discover the advantages of using eccentric contraction. Even though normally when we think of contraction, we're thinking of concentric shortening, but eccentric is always available. Whoops. And it makes you a stronger rock.
Yes. Okay.
What would an eccentric contraction of your calf muscle feel like, or how do you envision that?
Oh, it's a good question. So, even if whatever chair you're sitting on, just straddle it a little, and then you're going to put what I do in my mind when I need to resist a horse is the quick version is I tell my mind, lengthen every muscle in my body. Let every muscle get long all at once. But if I'm focused on a leg, this is where the weight in your thigh, going through the thigh to the ball of the foot, finding gravity helps you lengthen the muscles and then you tighten them. Right? And it's a nuance. So I go the quickest way I found is whether I need rein aids, leg aids, or I'm using my back for a braking aid, I just tell my body lengthen everywhere, then contract. Lengthen, then contract. And I had to keep telling myself that over and over because instinctually, when we go to tighten muscle, instinct tells us to shorten. And then all the gestures that we've learned as leg aids and rein aids and seat aids, all of traditional training encourages us to make a gesture and shorten the muscle. So this is a very different way to look at aids. But the egg on the little table robot is such a strong visual example of why we can't do that. The physics are the same. Every time the egg moves, the table moves. The table moves, the egg moves. Weight distribution changing. So when we change our weight distribution on purpose, it would be like the table moving, and the egg shifting weight to one side in order not to be moved. If the egg had the conscious awareness to do that, which we do.
It's such a just a thought almost, but like you said, it's training. It's like when I fly through the air as I'm getting bucked off, I keep saying relax, relax, relax,
I know it works too.
and it works. I don't get hurt.
You just don't get hurt as bad, yeah.
But in you know what an eddy is in a stream?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a lengthening of the formation of the rocks out. So it has a more gentle diversion of the water, but it moves more water than just
Yes.
one rock.
Yes. Yes. And so the same thing, like in the ocean, they build, I don't want to say, what's it called? I guess it's also an eddy, but
Like
it's
a
like
jetty. A jetty.
a
A certain
yes.
reef.
Yes. But reefs do the same thing, jetties do the same thing, and they build these rock and cement jetties out where they're going to park boats. So it reduces the wave force for the harbor where you park the boat. That's what they do.
It's calm in there.
Yeah, and that thing doesn't move. So no matter what, however stormy the ocean is, it's still going to reduce wave force in the harbor because it's acting the same way our arms and legs act. It's just the opposite direction. Right.
I know I've told people when they're riding that they're going to almost exaggerate their movements in the beginning if the horse to reflect the horse because it's not sensitive to tiny moves. And then you can start reducing it. And the goal is so nobody ever sees you give a cue.
Right. Right. And that's what all good riders look soft but stable. That's the tricky part is feeling how when we shift weight and change muscle tone, it can make us feel like we're moving. But there's a little brain trick we can give ourselves, which is I can move around my bones. I can move around the bowl of water in my pelvis, but I can't let the water slosh in my pelvis. Or I can put a ping pong ball in a bowl of water that sits inside my pelvis. And that's the still point. Everything else can organize around that, right? So there's different things I've got in the Optimal Balance Essentials book and things we've talked about that are always just different images, ideas, and thoughts that help us organize coordination that way. So, and this email, I wanted to share this with you guys quickly, and you can let me know, Peggy, if it's okay. If people want a copy of it, I can email it.
Yeah, of course, no worries.
But what Peggy did for me, for our group, was she went through all of the transcripts for all of our weekly meetings back to March
Wow.
and ran it through her AI assistant, Sabrina. And I thought this was pretty interesting. So it's basically a really quick synopsis of what some of the messages were meeting after meeting. And I thought I would just go through part of this with you guys. So March to June 2026, this is what Sabrina noticed as the core training principles. And she puts it in different words, which I really enjoy. So this might help some of you guys. Observe before you diagnose. Become a detective before you become a trainer. I really like that.
That's good.
Sorry, let me see if I can. Okay. Everything begins with careful observation. Don't ask, how do I fix this? Ask, what am I actually seeing? Is it consistent? Does it change with direction? What pattern is emerging? The best trainers don't jump to conclusions. Seek the cause, not the symptom. The horse's behavior is rarely the real problem. Instead, ask, what is causing this behavior? Is it balance, fear, confusion, compensation, physical discomfort? The behavior is information. The horse is always trying to solve a problem. Perhaps Kirsten's most important idea, instead of asking, why won't he, ask, what problem is he trying to solve? Everything changes once you see the horse as a problem solver rather than a problem creator. I never would have said it that
Love
way,
that.
but love that.
Amazing. Yes.
Love that. Build the
Yeah,
learning.
we always see the horse as the problem creator, right?
Right, because it's a problem for us. But what they're really trying to do is solve a problem for themselves.
Or give up and react in a negative way.
Or protect themselves.
Yes.
Absolutely. Protect themselves or solve. And so that's part of solving a problem. If they
Right.
feel fearful, they're going to do what they need to protect themselves and cope with the situation.
Because that's the only tool they know, but we are offering other tools, which is cool. Yeah.
Right. Build the learning frame of mind first. A horse cannot learn well unless it is mentally available, emotionally regulated, attentive, curious, thinking. Training begins with creating this mental state. I would say that applies to school children as well.
Absolutely.
Balance comes before movement. Don't train movement, train balance. I thought this was a little bit of a nuanced understanding. Movement improves automatically. This applies to steering, transitions, collection, lateral work, trail riding. Everything improves when balance improves. Organize the rider before organizing the horse. This really touches on today's topic. The rider is never separate from the equation, right? The egg and the table have a dynamic relationship of force interaction. So your seat, posture, breathing, timing, muscle tone, attention are teaching, well, I should say they're dynamically influencing the horse every second. The horse organizes around the rider. Long and low changes the horse's body. Long and low is not a headset, a warm-up, a trick. It is a method of reorganizing the horse's body. It changes muscle recruitment, fascia, top line, posture, movement patterns. It is a preparation for everything that follows. The only caveat to that is that it's really all of that is true for horses that have habituated the posture of extension. When they're transitioning from extension, long and low does all of that. If they're stuck in long and low, it's not going to get any better staying in long and low. That's another posture we move on from. Let the horse search. One of Kirsten's signature ideas, when the horse pauses, don't immediately help. Don't immediately correct. Allow the horse time to think. Searching is learning. Ooh, I like that. Searching is learning. Confidence is built at the edge of the comfort zone, not inside comfort, not inside panic. Learning occurs in the not too sure zone. Repeated successful experiences gradually expand confidence. Use the minimum support necessary. Support should match the horse. Too little support creates anxiety. Too much support prevents learning. The art is finding the amount that allows the horse to stay engaged and think. Oh, I thought I'd like that one too. Exercises don't create balance. And I use the word tasks to say tasks don't create balance. Exercises reveal balance. A circle ridden by an organized horse builds strength. The same circle ridden by an unorganized horse reinforces
Horses
imbalance.
imbalance.
Mechanics matter more than maneuvers. Quietness is communication. Great riding becomes quieter, less rein, less correction, less tension, less urgency, more clarity. The quieter the rider, the easier it is for the horse to hear. Master the basics before adding complexity. Don't hurry to shoulder in collection half pass pirouettes. First, develop relaxation, long and low, straightness, balance, and rhythm. Advanced movements simply magnify the quality of the basics. Adjust the training to preserve learning. I liked her take on this. Don't become committed to one exercise. Become committed to one outcome. Love that. A horse that can still think, if the horse loses its learning frame of mind, change the exercise, change the level of support, change the environment. The goal is not finishing the plan. The goal is to keep the horse learning.
That's good.
The meta principle. After 16 meetings, I think every one of these principles rests on a single overarching idea. Every decision should answer one question. Given what this horse is telling me right now, what is the most supportive thing I can do next? To me, is the essence of Kirsten's philosophy. I would say, yeah, I'd agree with that. What is the most supportive or productive thing? And that helps you become really creative, adapting to what the neighbors are doing, what the other boarders are doing, what the other horse in the arena is doing, how your horse woke up that day, whether they feel sick or well, or tired or cranky or anxious. It's like, yeah. Oh, she did a flow chart. Okay. If I had to reduce Kirsten's entire approach to one flow chart, it would look like this. Observe, understand, organize yourself, support the horse, allow the horse to think, reward the search, repeat until it becomes habit, only then progress. Interesting. Yeah, that is kind of it in a nutshell, isn't it?
That's cool. Can you send that to us?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
One final observation. As we've gone through these meetings, something has become clear to me. Most training systems begin with the question, how do I get my horse to do this? Kirsten begins somewhere entirely different. What does my horse need in order to discover this? That may seem like a subtle difference, but I believe it's the defining characteristic of her teaching. It shifts the rider's role from someone who makes things
Makes things
happen
happen.
to someone who creates the
Create the
conditions
conditions.
in which the
Oh,
horse
wow.
can succeed. Yeah, I think these 15 principles will become the backbone of the entire learning library. And as we continue adding Monday meetings, oh, that's just note to Peggy. Yeah, I like that.
Oh, love
That's
it.
so cool.
Yeah, thank you, Peggy, for sharing
That's
that.
so interesting. Kirsten, I hope this doesn't mean you're going to retire now.
No. No.
No, we still need her keen eye.
I know,
No,
and it's
we do. We
interesting.
need you.
I think what I love is like AI is basically garbage in, garbage out. There's a huge what I find with people asking horse questions out of AI just on the internet is AI is only going to scrape the internet and come up with answers. So you get the same crap that's already out there. But what I really like with Peggy playing with AI as much as she had within our group information is her AI is saying the same things in different ways and encapsulating, like recapping volumes of conversations and thoughts and reducing it down to some important points. Which is not what I'm good at. Like that, my job is to give the whole picture and figure out how to take these concepts and apply them in unique ways. So it's really nice because what Peggy's getting from her AI is a lot of reinforcement. You know, a lot of just succinct little, like, think about it this way instead of thinking about it that way.
And then
And
I've also been
it's
feeding
like a
in,
backbone.
I've also been feeding in Kirsten's and my lessons, as well as my daily reports to her on my riding
Oh,
or
cool.
my training. So it's been an interesting journey, but I had to put in all of our group meetings because I missed a couple of them, number one. And number two, you don't always come away feeling like you've got it all organized in your mind. So I wanted the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, and
Yeah,
that
that's
was,
exactly what it is.
and it
That's
was
nice.
fantastic because it did pick up the repeated concepts throughout all the variety of conversation and situations. And I think that's the important part for me as a trainer and what I share teaching is that when you really wrap your head around the concepts, the application can just happen so much faster in a huge variety of situations. You see the driving factors or the conditions that are creating the problem rather than how I used to look at it. And this is how most people still look at it. If the horse pulled back when he was tied, right? That's the problem. And I had 10 recipes how to fix it, but each way of fixing it was just a recipe. It was like go through these steps and it will work. And I go, but the horse could always outsmart it. And some horses could outsmart every recipe solution I had. And I go, well, now what? Right? Or the horse didn't react the way the recipe said it was going to react, right? Because it's a unique thinking, feeling horse. So it's a wild card how any person or any horse is going to respond to anything is just unpredictable. And like Deb and I on the podcast, we'll use the example of roller coasters. I love them. Deb hates them, right? The roller coaster is the roller coaster. I go, for me, that's an enjoyable afternoon. For Deb, you may as well just
Horror story.
You may as well just poke pins in her face or something. Not an enjoyable afternoon. So it's the same thing, it's same situation, but two very different responses. And just like full circle, what we talked about with the aids and looking at, like, I don't care how famous someone is that says move with the horse. I go, there is a Newtonian reality. In classical physics explains it. We don't even have to go into quantum physics. There is a Newtonian reality of two forces interacting in motion. And balance is elusive. The table couldn't stabilize, the egg couldn't stabilize. Right? So I go, this is what gives me confidence. It's not my opinion. I go, good luck. And unfortunately, the what drives me to keep teaching and putting out, never quitting or retiring, is the horse is the one that suffers in that equation. So I go, until people understand the physics involved, the horse is always having to compensate. And we're very quick to go, if the horse can't do that, demand obedience, use more leverage, push him through it. And even trainers I've worked with that had the best intentions for the horse, the thought process was just get them to do it and they'll be better for it on the other side. And right in that window was a lot of safety issues, health issues, and just not very fun stuff happening.
The mental acceptance, if it's not there, then it learns it in a bad way.
Well, it's just like people. If you're never relaxed and feel safe, you get very creative and clever and well skilled at defending yourself.
You know what visual just came to my mind when you were saying, like, the idea is to get them to do whatever it is, and on the other side, they'll be better. I had this vision of myself standing up on a diving platform with a coach with like a whip or a cattle prod. Like, you're going to do a platform dive and you're going to do a triple, you're going to do this and that, and like shoving me off. And it's like, how am I better off? I mean, that's extreme. That's where
No,
my
that's a
brain went.
really, it's a very, it's the equivalent. of
with
how
my
we
ho with
force horses out on trail rides, especially. But I see it all the time. It's like, get out of the trailer and go on the trail is like pushing you off the platform and saying, just do it.
You'll be better
It's
off.
kind of selfish, you know? It's kind of,
It is.
it's very selfish of us.
And for horses that started being bullied around, like I'm sure mine was, he just did not believe you. If you said, do this, he fought back. And now he's interested in what's going on because he has found that we're trustworthy.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, having been with you for so long, Kirsten, he's just turned into a different horse.
He's finally a Twinkie.
He is a Twinkie.
He's a Twinkie, soft in the
But
middle.
he pays attention. Even when I'm doing anything with him, he's constantly like looking at me like, you know,
What are we doing?
what are we doing? You know, and when he figures out that something makes him feel good, he jumps right on it. He's like, oh, let
And
me show you.
that's the thing training and money could never buy was to take like Hercules, this horse that's basically my ward, has become calm, cooperative, and affectionate. He was the antithesis of those three things when I started with him. And for him, like he actually cut his foot the other day. He's been on stall rest. And when I go into the stall to clean it or get him out to wrap him, he's been nuzzling me with his nose. I was like, where did that come from? It used to be if the mouth got anywhere close, you were going to get teeth. And it was.
Love it. How many years
So,
have you had him, Kirsten?
over a decade.
That's what I thought. 'Cause
He was three, right? Wasn't it
Yeah, he was just 3 or 4 when he
three or
came to
four when he
me.
came? Yeah, that's what I remember.
Toughest horse I've ever had to work with. Oh my God.
You remember that time he busted away from Allie and ran
Yeah,
off?
he does that every
If he
newbie.
hasn't busted away from you, you haven't handled him yet.
Exactly.
Like ran into the grass paddock.
No, the only way, one time I had to hold on to him because he was fine. He had done something on a tendon on his one good leg. Hercules was lame on three legs. He had one good leg. And he had injured his one good leg. He was on stall rest and it was time to start getting him out and walking him. And I thought, oh my God. Like he pulls away from me, everybody, even track professionals, everybody. So the only way to hold on to him was I had a lead rope with a chain, put the chain over his nose, and when he went to bust and pull away, threw myself like a cannonball onto the ground and just sat down, right, and made him drag my dead weight.
Wow. Oh, God. Wow.
Right. So, see you later, Peggy. We're going to wrap it up anyways. But that
Thank
was,
you.
and he still dragged me about 10 feet before he spun around and looked at me and could not believe I could hang on to the rope.
Jeez. Hope you're wearing gloves.
A force to contend with.
Yeah, he's a force. But again, learning to use physics, right? Curling all my body weight up and throwing it to the ground made me as heavy as I could possibly be and allowed me to hang on with both hands strongly to the lead rope.
I had a friend that used to, when she went on trail rides, her horse would always break away. So she took the rope and she tied it around a great big heavy rock. And wherever he was going, so he had to drag that rock wherever he was going, and he couldn't get far and he couldn't get fast.
Meanwhile, you mean while she was riding, or
No, when she would try to tie him to the when she would go on trail rides, she would try to take to, hook him up to the
Trail.
trailer, and he would always get away. So he either undo it or, you know, and then just take off. But big heavy
Well,
rock.
it's like an anchored boat.
Yes.
That's basically the same physics. It's anchor the boat. Take a heavy weight, throw it to the bottom, use gravity. Plus a chain. And if I had a really long lead rope with a chain, I would have used that. But the only chain I had was a short lead rope, so that's a little tougher, but still worked.
Well, I can say, don't use a kettlebell.
But now if he pulls away from me, since I moved to this farm, if he pulls away from me, he typically will do it coming in for dinner. And he's such a smart horse. The thing that finally worked and developed some self-control before dinner, even when he's excited, is if he got away, I let go of the lead rope, he'd go to the stall, I'd get him back out, or the door would be closed. I get him and I go throw him in a paddock and I make him wait till I feed everybody else and finish the barn and then let him in for dinner. And so he learned the fastest way to get his dinner was to walk calmly. And he learned. That's what he does now. He keeps a lid on it, even if he's excited, because if he gets the rope out of my hand, it's just going to take longer to get your dinner.
That's a good one.
All right, you guys, we'll wrap it
Okay.
up.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
Thanks.
Kirsten.
Be
Good to
sure and
see you
send us
again.
that thing.
I
Yeah,
will.
that
I'll
email.
forward Peggy's email to the whole
Yeah.
group.
Thank you.
And you guys
I'm going
can
to
have a
cut it
look
out
at
and put it
it.
on the wall.
Yeah, I thought that
I
was a
know.
really
It's a
good
good one.
synopsis of all the meetings since last March. Yep. All right, you guys.
Thank
Okay.
you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
Bye.
you.
Take
Bye.
care.
Bye.